Welcome to the Keto Lifestyle Podcast, hosted by nutritional coach Jessica Tai, where we are dedicated to promoting health and overall well-being through nutrition, specifically the ketogenic diet. We will provide you with all the latest science in nutrition, interviews with experts in the health and wellness field, and answer all your burning questions so you can find optimal health. This podcast is not intended to be used as medical advice and is to be used for informational purposes only. Please contact your doctor with any and all medical questions. Now here's Jessica.
Hello and welcome to the Keto Lifestyle Podcast. This is your host, Jessica Tai, and this is episode number 78. You probably already can hear in the background that I am recording this in a location where there is lots of construction going on around me, and I very much apologize for that. I hope that it won't be too distracting, and I hope that you will be able to make it through this episode. This is literally the only alternative I had to being able to get this episode out this week for you guys. I didn't want to take another week off. We had hoped to be wrapped up with everything by now and be able to get these recorded and get out and everything going normal, but it has, best laid plans, right? Things just don't always work out the way that you hope they will. So we are in a big transition for our family. We are moving, in the process of moving, from our home that we lived in one area and just moving to the very next town, our family. But there are two different school districts. We still have a month of school left. So we are kind of still living in our home in the kids' school district while moving into this home, which I am currently recording at right now. There is construction going on at both of those homes. the one I'm living, or we're moving to, and then the one that we were living in as well. And so I picked the lesser of the two today, thinking that this would be the best place to record. I'm unable to record in my office today, so these were the only options, and I'm picking the one that I thought would be the best, but there is a lot of hammering going on suddenly as I am trying to record this. Sorry about that. Please just bear with me through this episode if you can. I just didn't want to take another week off. I miss talking to you guys, and many of you have reached out through email and through my website, through social media. I appreciate that. It's always great to stay in contact with you guys, and I love answering your questions. So when you have questions that you want to send me, I'm happy for you to do so. You can go to my website, and that is www.jessicatai.com. You can learn more about different programs I offer. I am currently completely booked on one-on-one coaching, so I don't have any spots open for that right now. I think everybody's looking to get in shape for the summer maybe and change the way that they're eating and kind of thinking about healthier, you know, the warmer weather. You're thinking about the wearing summer clothes, going on vacations, that kind of stuff, I guess. So we had a surge in clients. So no current openings, but I am getting ready to open up a group class. This will be my first group class that I am doing online that is going to be open to anyone, anywhere online. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to redo it through like a Zoom classroom, and that will be done twice. We will offer it, or I will offer it twice a week. So if you can't make one of the times, you can make it on the other time. Hopefully we'll do one of those during the day and then one of them in the evening. So look for more information on that. I will post that on my website as soon as I have that all figured out, hoping to start that registration for that class rather this week, potentially next week. But I'm really hoping to get it going this week. So stay tuned for that. We'll see how that goes. And going to be kind of, I believe the one I'm going to start with is going to be kind of a class about really getting the most out of your keto lifestyle. So kind of really bumping up your efforts. So it'd be good if you're a beginner, you'll kind of learn the right stuff right from the beginning. Or if you have been at this for a while, or you are just kind of wanting to really tweak it and get the most out of your keto lifestyle, or maybe you've been at this and you're kind of at a stall and you're frustrated and want to get some more out of it, trying to figure out how to do do that, it would potentially be a very good class for that as well. So stay tuned and I'll let you know how that's going to go. I'm going to try to keep it very affordable because I just want to give you guys another option for coaching and for getting the help that you want in not just keto, but nutrition. I mean, the heart and soul of what I do is nutritional therapy. So, you know, I'm really looking at helping people really get the most out of their lifestyle and really get the most out of, you know, nutrient dense whole foods. So there will be a lot of talk about that, a lot of working to help you really maximize your health and your lifestyle so that you really can do keto right. Because I don't believe that you can do keto or any diet or lifestyle unless you really get some of those things dialed in, like digestion and stress management and sleep and those types of things. So that is what we will be focusing on mostly in any class really that I am going to be teaching. Okay, so for today's episode, there are a couple of things I wanted to touch on. First thing I want to do is I think I'm going to start out with an email that I got from a listener, and I just wanted to read this and kind of respond to this, and I did respond to the listener already, but I wanted to read it and respond to it through this podcast because I feel like this is a kind of... not that I see exactly this type of thing come through, but when I try to respond to things through this podcast, through messages that I get, it's because I get a lot of this of similar type of things. And so I know that there's many of you struggling with a lot of the same similar types of struggles when you're trying to change your diet and lifestyle and whatnot, whether it's keto or whatever it is. And so I wanted to address this one today because I think that there's more of you out there that are having these same types of issues and want to make sure that I kind of get the information out there to everybody as much as I can. So this listener writes, she titled the email Failing. And here's what it says. Dear Jessica, good morning. I'm sitting here in my living room this morning crying in my coffee. I feel like I'm out of control with my diet. I have been low carb for 3.5 years and lost 63 pounds. I started at 216 pounds. I have since gained about 8 pounds and I can't get it off. I'm 46 years old and I am majorly stressing over my food choices. Confession, I have had at least one bad meal a week since Thanksgiving. I know that's what my problem is, but I can't get it under control. I do great during the week and fail on the weekends. I try to intermittent fast, but I literally get sick a lot of the times if I stretch it to 16 hours. When I do good, I have bacon and eggs for breakfast, no snacks, and lunch is usually a piece of chicken or ground beef patty with added butter and a veggie. Dinner is usually a salad with spring mix, a little tomato, parmesan, roasted pecans, a tablespoon of olive oil, and 2 tablespoons of Marzetti, all natural ranch dressing. I am done for the day after dinner. What can I do to get back on and stay on track? This is a lifestyle, not a fad diet. I can't afford to hire a private coach, so I am at this alone. I don't know if any low-carb doctors or dietitians in my area, so I have no one to turn to. I don't do social media, so that knocks out any help here. I am scared to trust anyone, just anyone. I listen to your podcast, and so I turn to you once again. Okay, so there's a few things I want to address in this email. Number one, I do feel her pain, and I understand exactly what she is going through and have been there myself. I've talked about it on this podcast. You eat something that you know you shouldn't be eating or that you feel like is not going to serve your body best is really how I should probably word it. Because I really don't believe that there's good or bad food. I have one of my children, my 12-year-old son, ask me all the time. He'll bring something to me and say, Mom, is this good or is this bad? And I'm like, it's neither. Stop asking me that. You know, how is this going to serve your body? What is this going to do for your body? Is this going to do good things for your body? Is it going to do a lot of good things, just a little bit of good things, no good things? You know, is it going to do bad things for your body? Is it going to make you feel bad? You know, looking at food more as like fuel or, helping to serve you in some capacity. Not things as like good or bad, like as if you're good or you're bad if you eat this or you don't eat this or whatever. I think we need to move away from that because I think that that is not only psychologically, I don't think it's good. I think emotionally it can be bad. I just don't think that we should give food that power, right? Like, we should have the power over the food, not let the food dictate that to us. So just not labeling the food like that. Same way I feel about labeling things keto or not keto. There is no keto food, guys. It's just food. Does it serve you in your pursuit of whatever it is you're pursuing? If that is being in ketosis, well, then does that food promote ketosis for you, or does it move you away from ketosis? Like, that's how you should be looking at it. So anyway, I understand where she's coming from. It is amazing that she has lost 63 pounds on her low carb. She says low carb diet, and she has been low carb for 3.5 years. That's great. That's amazing. I think that's really, really good. Now, she doesn't mention being keto. She mentions being low carb. So I have no idea if she's testing or knows if she's in ketosis or anything like that. And honestly, not that that even really matters. Like, if you want to be producing ketones, great. If you don't want to be, that's fine too. I'm totally fine with that. So she's eating low carb. So she says she's gained about 8 pounds back, and she feels like the reason that this is happening is that she's had at least one bad meal a week since Thanksgiving. She says she cannot get that under control. So sounds like what's kind of happened is she's begun indulging in a few things easy to do over the holidays, and she's had a really hard time kind of nipping that in the bud and getting back on the track that she wants to be on, which is eating low carb food. Excuse me, take a little drink here. So that can be a tough spot to be in. For some people, they can have something every now and then, or a couple of bites of something every now and then, and they can go right back to their low carb or ketogenic lifestyle with no problems, no issues, and that's great. For other people, which it sounds like this listener is kind of falls into this camp, once you kind of do that, it's a slippery slope, and it just gets harder and harder to kind of combat those cravings. Now, I believe that one of the biggest reasons that is it depends on your insulin sensitivity. So if you are, you know, don't have a lot of insulin resistance and you really haven't struggled with that most of your life, then I think that it would probably be easier for you to go kind of back and forth from low carb to maybe eating a higher carb meal every now and then, or having a higher carb day, and then you're able to kind of get right back on the low carb train no problem. But when you struggle with any type of insulin resistance or any type of, you know, metabolic struggle or issue like that, then I think it is really hard to move away or to move toward the higher carb, higher glucose foods and be able to get it on track again. It just kind of sends you into that tailspin and can make it really difficult. I also believe that the clue that she says she gets sick a lot of times if she tries to stretch it, her intermittent fasting to 16 hours, is also a clue to me that she is probably dealing with some hyperinsulinemia or, you know, just some insulin resistance there. She has a really hard time when she is not continually fueling herself. And I know there's might be a lot of other people out there that are dealing with some of the same things, and you hear all the time about fasting, and whether it's long-term fast or intermittent fasting in this lifestyle, this way of eating. And a lot of times people are like, well, I can't even do that. So what is wrong with me? Am I not doing it right? Does that mean I'm not keto? Does that mean I'm not eating low carb? Like, should I not do this? It doesn't work for me. There is nothing that says you have to intermittent fast. However, I believe if hormonally things are in line and your digestion is working well, and really digestion can kind of still be off, because actually intermittent fasting can really be, or longer term fasting can really be very helpful in healing digestive issues. But when you are trying to do intermittent fasting and it's not working for you, oftentimes that is an indication that your body really is not doing well with the lower carb, the higher fat diet. Maybe it could be because you really aren't digesting the food well. You aren't able to utilize the fat as well for fuel. And so when you go longer periods of time, your body is really struggling to be able to find a fuel source that it can use. Because you need to fuel yourself, as most of us understand, from being carb burners. At least at some point in our lives, we were carb burners. Before turning to this lifestyle, we would get that hangry feeling. You know, you can only go for a couple of hours and you'd get very hungry, very irritated, irritable, maybe very moody, tired, those types of things. And that's an indicator that your glycogen levels are running low. You need to refuel, you need some glucose, you know, your blood sugar's dipped. And so when our bodies are used to running like that, it can be very difficult to intermittent fast, even just intermittent fasting, when you're a carb burner. So when you move to this lifestyle, if you're not able to actually utilize the foods that you're bringing in now, which can be protein and fat, are more difficult for our bodies to be able to digest than simple carbohydrates are and sugars. So this can just be a little bit of an extra added burden to your body. So that can be a little bit harder for you. It can also be a very clear indication of some hormonal disruption, some hormonal malfunctioning, imbalances, if you will, just of our hormones and the way that our body's functioning together and the way those systems are working. So primarily with insulin, leptin, ghrelin, we can have issues with those. We can have issues with our HPA axis, which I've talked about before on here, your hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal, with the communication there with those glands and things just, you know, you need, just feeling like you need this fuel to be able to keep yourself going because you've got some other imbalances there. So those things can definitely lend themselves to you continuing to go back to these foods that you don't necessarily want to eat, because you feel like if you don't eat those things, you just have this serious drive to eat them, and it's extremely difficult to ignore that. And especially when you're intermittent fasting, because you just really get so hungry, and the will to eat those things, the desire to eat those things, just become too much, and it's really easy to kind of fall into that. The other thing that I would say is the bacon and eggs for breakfast. She says, when I do good, again, I would encourage anyone to not label yourself as good or bad based on what you're eating. I think that just sets us up for failure, because we start labeling ourselves as good or bad. And then when you make a choice that you're not happy with, you think, well, I'm bad now, so I might as well just, you know, who cares? I just blew it. So I'll just, you know, screw the whole rest of the day. I'll just eat whatever and I'll do better tomorrow. Like, it's that always, I'll start on Monday thing, because you feel like you did bad. And so you'll just start on Monday when you can be good. None of us are ever going to be perfect all the time in the way that we fuel ourselves, or at least I'm not. And I don't personally know anybody that is. So probably if you think someone is, or if they're telling you that they are, you either A, don't really know what they're actually eating, and so you're just kind of putting that on them, and that's not really the truth. Or B, if they're telling you that they are, they're probably not telling you the whole truth. Or C, they might be superhuman. They may not even be human at all, so watch out. Because really, it's just human to kind of fluctuate in our decision making. And there's so much that goes into that. Like, did you get a good night's sleep the night before? And are you stressed out? And is it an emotional thing? Or, hey, are you having a great time and you're in a place that is lending itself to you having a food that maybe you normally wouldn't eat, but hey, when in Rome. And so you just go ahead and do that, and that's fine. So, you know, I don't think there's any of us are perfect about our diets all the time in the way that we're eating. So you're not good or bad based on what you're eating, number one. But when I'm looking at what she says that she has on a good day are the eggs and bacon for breakfast. That's good. No snacks. That's good because we don't want to be snacking. That will keep our insulin levels high, and insulin is what makes us store fat, so we don't want to do that. Then she says lunch is usually a piece of chicken or ground beef patty with some butter and a veggie. That sounds fine. I mean, I don't know how much. To me, that doesn't really sound like a ton of food, not for breakfast or lunch. But if that, you know, I'm not really sure how much exactly she's eating or how much fat she's adding to those. Dinner is usually a salad with, spring mix, a little tomato, Parmesan, roasted pecans. That just overall, looking at kind of the day, just imagining those meals, doesn't sound like enough fat or enough protein to me. Throughout the day. I mean, there's no mention of protein with dinner except the roasted pecans. The only mention of fat with dinner is a tablespoon of olive oil and 2 tablespoons of the Marzetti natural ranch dressing, which I would encourage you to stay away from because it is made with bad oils. I believe the Marzetti is made with it, the base is canola oil. Most of those, or soybean oil, most of those dressings are canola oil, soybean oil. Occasionally they will be like a sunflower oil base. But in general, you just don't want to use any of those. The oils are not good. There's added sugars to those dressings typically, and they may not say sugar on the label, but they are in, you know, they've got them listed on there incognito. So they're labeled as something else, typically some kind of a tall on there, and you don't realize that it is sugar, and or they've, you know, masked the name in some other way, and then you think, oh, okay, this is fine. See, there's no added sugar. So look at the carbs that are in that dressing, and I'm, you know, gonna pretty much guarantee you that there's sugar in that, and that's not helping you either, and really could be driving this. Realistically, what's kind of an addiction that's driving you to continue to want to feed that, you know, that carb addiction. So, so that's kind of my advice in general. I don't know this person. I have not worked with them personally. I don't know their health history. I don't know any health issues they're dealing with. I don't know, you know, I don't even know specifically the amount of food they're eating or the calories that they need. But it, you know, with me thinking that the food intake sounds a little bit low to me, as far as like the protein and fat specifically. What happens when you're eating too low, and I know I've talked about this many, many, many times, but when you're not eating enough calories during the day, that is a recipe for you to either stall on keto or start putting weight back on. Because what happens when you eat, when you go low carb and you cut those things out, that's great. You're going to initially lose weight. And if you have a lot of weight to lose, you may initially lose a lot of weight. And that's super, and that's great. And that is a step in the right direction. But often what we start to kind of do is we're not eating all of these, you know, filler foods anymore, and these prepackaged foods, this junk. So when you're eating real food, you get full quicker, and you can't just sit and like pound all this junk food all the time. So kind of what happens is we swing the other direction and we start eating not enough calories. Like, this is where the only time calories matter to me is much less about, it's definite, never ever is it calories in, calories out, but it's much more to me becomes a story of, are you eating enough calories? Are you fueling your body with enough? Because if you're not, after a while, the weight loss will stop and you will start putting weight back on, because your body is designed to keep you alive and it will do everything that it can to keep you alive. And so if you're not getting enough calories to fuel your body every day, then it will start conserving and packing away fat to help you out, because it thinks that there is either a famine coming or you are just consistently not able to get enough food. So it's going to make sure you have extra reserves so that you don't perish. So it's your body working with you, not against you. So this is not an easy thing to figure out mathematically, but I'm going to give you a couple calculations here that you can figure out what your basal metabolic or your resting metabolic rate is. Now, basal metabolic and resting metabolic rate are two different rates, but they are very, very similar. If you figure out one, you pretty much know what they both are. So your basal metabolic rate is literally just the amount of energy. It's the amount of calories that it takes to fuel your body, just to run your body, just to keep your body going, keep your basic body systems going, and just keeping you alive, basically, for when you're at rest. So it doesn't include your activity, or like if you go work out on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or whatever, those days would be a completely different, those are completely different metabolic rates. So we're just talking about the rate that it takes to fuel your body, keep you alive, keep your systems functioning. So in order to figure this out, now I have a machine at my office that I use with my clients, and we allow people in the area to be able to, you don't have to be a client, you can just sign up on my website and come in and use the machine whenever you want, at your leisure. But the machine, one of the things that it does that I love so much is it works like a DEXA scan. And so it scans your body and gives you, one of the things that it gives you is a BMR. So it helps you to understand how many calories do you actually need to be eating every day to be able to maintain your weight. So in order to do this, if you wanted to try and calculate this on your own, for men, your basal metabolic rate, and I will put this in the show notes, but it is equal to, you're going to take 66.5 plus 13.75 multiplied by your weight in kilograms, plus 5.0 multiplied by your height in centimeters, and then you're going to take, I think that's it. And then you're going to add 1.85. Oh wait, no. Let's see. What do I have? Oh, and then you're going to subtract 7.76 multiplied by your age in years, and that will equal your metabolic rate. For women, you're going to take 655.1 plus. Plus 9.56 multiplied by your weight in kilograms, plus 1.85 multiplied by your height in centimeters, less 4.68 multiplied by your age. So I know this is very confusing to say on a podcast, but again, I will put this in the show notes. But here's an example. So if it was an 18-year-old female that weighs 55 kilograms and is 175 centimeters tall, then it would be 655.1 plus that 55 kilograms you put in there is you multiply that by the 9.56, so that would be 525.8 plus the 175 centimeters tall, which is where you plug that into the 1.85 times her height, so that would be 323.75 minus 84.24, because you're gonna take the 7.76 multiplied by the age in years, so that's multiplied by 18, and then that's gonna equal 1420.41. So her basal metabolic rate is 1420 calories per day. So that is just at rest. That's if she does nothing else, that's just what her body needs every day to function. So when you go adding to that, there are different scales. There are different ways that you can look at this, and I'll put a link to this as well, to these scales, if I can find that online. I'm sure I can. It's pretty easy to look up or to find, I'm sure. But you can. There's different scales that you can look up, and it will give you the. I'm trying to think of what this is actually. What it was called. It's something Harris. Now I can't remember the name, what they call that. I should have researched this before I started this podcast, I guess. I'll put this in the show notes as well. But it's actually a scale. This equation has been come up with. And there's actually a scale for your exercise or your activity level that then you can plug in to see if you add this number based on how active you are to that basal metabolic rate, then that will get you more of your active rate. Like if you're this active of a person, then this is the amount of calories that you need to be eating. And it's a very interesting thing to do. I think everybody should know this, at least get a pretty rough estimate, because it is definitely a struggle that I have as a nutritionist with my clients, specifically women, just thinking that they need to be eating less and not understanding that they need to actually oftentimes be eating more, and that it's about the nutrition quality that you're eating. Because often another thing that can really propel these cravings and keep us in this cycle that we can't get out of is if we're not eating enough nutrient dense, real whole foods, then it's really difficult for us to get out of this because our bodies are constantly screaming at us to eat and to eat more food. And we get these cravings, and it's the only way our body knows to be able to get us to eat more. So that's how it works. Versus, you know, it can't just say to you, oh, hey, do you know that you're low on zinc and iron and vitamin Bs? You know, we need some more B vitamins in here. So can you just go eat some liver? You know, we need some liver. It's not going to do that. It's just going to be like, man, we are suffering nutrient levels in here. Like, we need some micronutrients badly, and she's not giving them to us. So sound the alarm. We need food. And we're not typically going to go, when we get a craving, we don't typically go sit down and eat liver and onions. Some of us might, but usually those cravings are going to translate to salt or sugar, those types of foods. So start thinking potato chips and candies and all these things. So then when we see those things, it triggers like, oh yeah, that's what I want. I'm craving that, you know, that peanut butter cup or whatever. And really, that's not at all what your body needs. Obviously, we know that there's really little to no nutrient value in that peanut butter cup, but that's what our mind is telling us that we need. So I feel like I'm beating this into the ground. Hopefully that helps you a little bit to understand that. I hope this helps that listener that wrote in just a few ideas that maybe can help you in when you're trying to kind of figure these things out. The other quick thing that I wanted to go over in today's episode is I had somebody write in and ask about kids and sports performance and things like that, and like how they can get proper nutrition into their kids. They feel like they shouldn't be giving them protein shakes and all this type of thing, but that's kind of the norm and that's what everybody does. And so they aren't really sure what they should be doing or how they should be explaining it to their kids, how they should be getting their kids on board. And I love this question. I love that people are thinking about this. I think it's super important. And I'm actually going to be giving a talk to a high school football group tomorrow, parents, and on this very topic, on nutrition and lifestyle for their kiddos that are in a pretty intense sport. You know, I have a high schooler, two high schoolers that played football. And it's intense. I mean, they start early in the season. They, you know, in the summertime, we would go back to, they started football camp during the summer, and they are playing football, you know, pretty much 6 days a week throughout the entire football season. So it's intense, and it does demand a lot from kids. So, one of the things that I talk about when we do these presentations to these types of groups is I go over proper nutrition. Like, what is proper nutrition? Because you can talk about that and say that, and then people are like, oh yeah, proper nutrition. But that means something different to everybody that hears that. So to me, you know, I may be thinking, yeah, proper nutrition is like protein and fats. Like, you want to make sure those are your number one things you're getting, and that they're nutrient dense. You know, they're whole foods, they're from animals, and you're getting all this great stuff. And, you know, I prefer organic when at all possible, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And somebody else may be thinking, oh yeah, proper nutrition. Oh yeah, well, that's just fruits and vegetables and lots of whole grains. You know, that's what we need to be eating. So it's educating people on what actually proper nutrition is, and where do we get that nutrition from. So I like to talk about macronutrients and micronutrients. So if you listen to this show very often or any other health show, podcast, you probably are familiar with macronutrients, which are proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. And I also like to throw water in there as one of the macronutrients, as the fourth macronutrient, because it is absolutely essential to life. And then our micronutrients, which are vitamins and minerals. And so those can vary on what we need, depending on what age and stage of life we're at, what activities we're involved in. So of course, when we're talking to a group of athletes, their micronutrients that are probably coming to mind immediately for them are electrolytes. As far as minerals go, you know, they're thinking electrolytes because they know they need those, they sweat a lot, and they're probably losing a lot of those electrolytes when they're playing their sports. So then we also talk about fuel sources and kind of what the different fuel sources are that our bodies use. And we know those are glucose and fat. So just figuring out how they differ and where those come from and how those affect our bodies. And then I also talk about, I go into a little bit about the results that we've gotten from the standard American diet and why we really need to change and move away from that standard American diet protocol for our kids, just for their future and for their health now, you know, as well as future generations. And then I talk about the other factors that affect kids' performance and health, and really any athlete's performance and health. So one of those major ones that I focus on is sleep. So making sure that kids are getting sleep and making sure that parents understand how much sleep do your kids really need. So on average, the school age children, so that is explained by the National Sleep Foundation as children from 6 years old to 13 years of age, they need 9 to 11 hours of sleep. And teenagers, which is ages 14 to 17, need 8 to 10 hours of sleep daily. And so that is what they recommend is the minimum. And according to the National Sleep Foundation, and it's really important to make sure that that is actually quality sleep. So a lot of kids are going to bed with electronics in their room, phones, computers, you know, whatever, laptops sitting there, and they're getting, you know, these notifications like all night long as these different apps that they're signed up on, like Snapchat and, you know, Instagram, and I don't even know what all these different ones are that they use, but that they're getting all these notifications constantly throughout the night. And if they have those notifications on, the phones or the computers are not, maybe they're not making noise, maybe they've got that turned off, but they're lighting up constantly throughout the night. And you may not think that that's waking you up, but your brain is perceiving that light. And that is keeping you from getting into a deep sleep. It is also very detrimental that kids are on the electronics right before bed, and then they're falling asleep with them in their bed, or they're, you know, they're on them all hours of the night and finally falling asleep from just pure exhaustion. We need to be getting these electronics turned off at least an hour before bed every night. And this applies to us as well. But for the kids, it's really important because they're needing this amount of sleep every night and they're not getting it. When we are staying on these electronics, our melatonin production is severely delayed, and we cannot get into proper deep sleep, and we can't get into the right sleep cycles when we are delaying our melatonin production like that. So it creates, you know, a real negative effect in our cascade of hormones, starting from when we go to sleep and throughout the entire next day. So when we have teenagers, for instance, that need this 8 to 10 hours of sleep, if you have a teenager that's going to bed at 11 o'clock, and that's probably the norm for most teenagers, and they're on their phone until 11 o'clock, and then they have to get up to get ready and go to school at 6 a.m., well, they're already not even hitting the minimum 8 hours of sleep that they need, and they've been on that electronic, so you know that not only do they not get the minimum of that 8 hour minimum that they need, but it's the quality is not even there. So it's a real problem. So helping people to understand that I love to compare and contrast the popular snacks and drinks and meal replacements and stuff that are out there for kids. Being a mom with kids that are involved in sports, you know, I see what are brought to the practices. I see what are brought to the games. I mean, oh my goodness, if you guys have kids involved in soccer, then you probably are with me in understanding the craziness that it is really hard for me as a nutritionist to literally sit on the sidelines and watch the snacks that are doled out to the kids. It's just crazy. And there needs to be more education. So I love giving these talks to parents and parent groups, these sports groups, because, you know, you'll sit on the sidelines of a soccer game. You'll have an hour long soccer game. They will play a half an hour. They will have a snack at halftime, because goodness knows they've played for half an hour and just run. And I'm talking little kids. Like, this isn't even like intense sports. They'll sit down and have a snack, oranges, or which isn't the worst thing for kids, of course. I'm not saying that, but they'll have oranges or maybe applesauce or goldfish crackers or, you know, whatever it is that the parent volunteer has brought, or a granola bar. And then they go play the next half hour. And then when the game's over, they have another snack. And then they have a, you know, a Gatorade or a juice box, or because, you know, we have to replenish everything they just burn off. And I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, I mean, these kids are just completely hyped up on sugar the entire time they're playing. And that is what we are telling them and telling their bodies they need to rely on in order to play sports. And that is ridiculous. So I really want to see us move away from that. So helping parents to understand what you can give them, what they can be eating or drinking that is different from kind of what you're seeing out there and what the norm is and what makes you kind of feel like, oh, well, this must be right because it's what everybody does. And then the last part of kind of what I like to do is just ending with kind of easy and practical ways to start making changes today that can help affect these kids' tomorrows. Because, you know, it's really hard. It can be way overwhelming for parents to think like, oh my gosh, I have to change my kid's diet. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I have a 17-year-old, about to be 18-year-old. He's not gonna, like, if I told him, okay, you now are no longer allowed to eat this, now you have to start eating this, he'd be like, you're crazy. He wouldn't listen to me. And if he pretended to listen to me, then he would just go out and do whatever he wanted when he left anyway. I mean, he drives, he can go get what he wants. He works. He works at a pizza place, for crying out loud. So, and he can't have gluten. So, but I mean, he would just do whatever he wants, you know, and they make lots of decisions on food that I don't love. But all you can do, really, the best piece of advice that I can give to parents is just lead by example. Just eat and live your life in the best way that you can to fuel your body, fuel your brain, keep your health moving in the right direction. And kids notice. They're watching that stuff. They notice much more than you think they do. And if you're making those decisions consistently over and over and over, and they're watching you consistently make those decisions, they are watching you feel good and look good and be active. And trust me, they notice. They notice their friends' parents that maybe don't look as good as you do, or as healthy, or aren't as active, don't have as much energy, maybe get sick more than you do, maybe they're grumpier than you are. Kids notice that stuff. They will say things. They may not always say something to you, but every now and then, you know, one of my kids will come in and say something, and I usually have to be like, okay, guys, let's not talk about that. It's fine. You know, I appreciate that you feel like I'm healthier or whatever, but, you know, let's not go there. I'm trying to help them not to judge other people, but just trust me when I tell you they are paying attention and they do notice that stuff. So you can really help to influence their decisions that way. So I'm not going to go through my entire presentation of what I do, but or what I say, but a couple of the key points to kind of touch on is when you have children. In general, these things are important, but when you have children athletes, it's important as well, because people are really interested in how to get them peak performance, right? You want them to be able to be the best they can be and be performing the best they can on the field. And a lot of parents, I have a lot of friends that have kids that are involved in all these different select sports. Their schedules are crazy busy and they're traveling all over the place and doing all of this stuff. So trying to make sure that we're getting the right micronutrients into them is really, really important as well. Most people know the importance of protein, and even fats are starting to become more well known, but making sure that we're getting the right vitamins and minerals in. So fat soluble vitamins, that's A, D, E, and K. So our body stores those, and you have to have fat present to properly absorb them. They are transported through our lymph system, and then they ultimately reach our bloodstream for absorption throughout the body. So having fat present with those is super important. And it's really interesting that they are conveniently packaged in nature most of the time with a fat source. Isn't that interesting? So we can get those vitamins through like fatty fish, through eggs, organ meats, nuts and seeds, some root vegetables, raw dairy. And green leafy vegetables, things like that as well. You just want to make sure that if you're getting them through vegetables, you are pairing them with a good healthy fat. So you make sure that you are readily absorbing those vitamins. And we also need water soluble vitamins like the B vitamins and vitamin C. Those are super important also for athletes, especially. Our body cannot store water soluble vitamins. So that's important to remember. We urinate these out. So it's necessary. These are very necessary for energy facilitation within our body. And it's also very important to keep in mind that processing, like packaged foods, destroy these vitamins. So, and that includes the processing of like dairy products. So when you think, oh, I can get these products through dairy, it needs to be raw dairy or they're destroyed and you're not going to be able to utilize them anyway. So the B and C vitamins, meats and eggs and nuts and raw dairy, again, those are great sources. Organ meats, liver, great sources. Liver is excellent source of B vitamins. You can get these through citrus fruits. We all know vitamin C through citrus fruits. And of course, green leafy vegetables again. And then our minerals that we often hear a lot about, electrolytes like sodium, potassium, calcium, bicarbonate, phosphate, chloride, and magnesium. The most depleted electrolytes when we are playing sports and our kids are out there sweating and running around, especially in the heat of the summer, we see the most electrolyte deficiency then. And those electrolytes that we are most often becoming deficient in during those times are potassium and sodium. Those are most commonly depleted after these long sweat sessions and when we become dehydrated. So there are many great ways to replenish those, and they don't have to be through these sugary sports drinks, which is kind of what people seem to go to typically, and that's what we think of that we need, are these like Gatorades and Propels and I can't even think of some of the other ones off the top of my head, but some of the great ways to get sodium is sea salt, of course, just a pinch of salt, and that goes for potassium and chloride as well. And so I feel like this is like the easiest thing in the world, right? Like you just drink water and take a pinch of salt and put it under your tongue, maybe two pinches of salt. And there you go, boom, electrolytes restored. So it can be that easy. It doesn't have to be this complicated like we make it. Like we have to have this juice box or we have to have this Gatorade. Like, I mean, the marketing has been phenomenal on these things, right? Because I mean, that we just think this is what we have to have. Like we can't replenish our minerals if we don't drink these sports drinks, and that is just total baloney. Like that's not even true. In addition to sea salt, you can have sodium. A great source of sodium is dill pickles or olives, two real foods that have other great nutrient positive things about them, and we're getting the sodium that we need. We can also get chloride through the olives. It's a great source of chloride. Potassium, bananas, of course, everybody knows that, right? Well, how about avocados? Avocados have a lot more potassium than bananas. It's a great source of fat as well, which if you are trying to help your kiddos be fat fueled and kind of move away from the glucose and the carbs, then avocados are an excellent source of energy and potassium, again, sea salt. And then plain yogurt is even a good source of potassium. Magnesium, pumpkin seeds, those are a great source of magnesium, as well as many other seeds and nuts. And then, of course, dark chocolate. We all know that, right? So what kid doesn't like chocolate? So if we can just kind of move them toward the dark chocolate venture. And Lily's is one of my favorite chocolate bars on the market. They have so many different flavors. And you don't have to just get the dark chocolate of Lily's. You can get their other flavors, and you're going to get magnesium in there. And they're sweetened with stevia, so you don't have to worry about your kids getting that extra sugar. And they're still going to think it tastes great. My kids love the Lily's chocolate. And then calcium, sardines, amazing source of calcium. And I know you guys are rolling your eyes like, yeah, right. Let me see you get my kid to eat sardines. You might be surprised, actually. A lot of it is in the preparation, but then yogurt again, and cheese sticks. Like, kids love cheese sticks, right? And that's a good source of calcium. You can find raw cheese sticks, which are awesome if you can get your hands on those. And then the other electrolytes like bicarbonate, they're naturally produced in our body, so you don't really need to worry about getting them through your diet. But just focusing on these other ones, like we said, specifically sodium and potassium are what we deplenish, what we most need to replenish when we're dehydrated. So those are easy ones to focus on. And I know most kids love dill pickles, and there are some really great, like Bubby's dill pickles. They are so good. There are so many other benefits other than them just having great sodium in there for your kids. But they, Bubby's is fermented, and the kids have no idea that they're fermented. They just think they're dill pickles and they taste great. But so they're also getting the benefits of eating these fermented foods. So those are kind of interesting way to, or not interesting, but those are big deals for kids to be able to make sure that they're getting these things. And it just popped in my head, the Harris-Benedict equation. That is the BMR equation I was trying to think of earlier. So I will put that in my show notes so you guys can read that and see that. And then as well, the physical activity levels and kind of the markers that they use to add that to the equation to see what your markers should be for that. So before we wrap up, I did want to talk really quickly about some things that you can do to kind of get started with your kids, or with you or your husband or whoever, however you want to do this, but really I did gear this toward kids. There's just some things that you can change, and I'm not suggesting that you do all of these things at once. I think when you're trying to make lasting changes, the most important thing is to just don't try to do it all or nothing. Just try to make one little change a week. Like, not a big deal. Don't force the kids on, don't force this on them. Don't push them, because you'll push them in the opposite direction. So I think if you just try one change a week, make it simple, make it easy. You know, maybe if you pack lunches, you just make one change to that lunch. Or you tell them, one day we're going to pack it my way. You can choose all the other days of the week, but one day you're going to do it my way. You know, ultimately, guys, you're the boss. You're the parent, right? So you don't want to push them too far, and you don't want it to backfire on you, but you can kind of gently nudge them in the right direction. So currently, if they are eating sugary drinks and sodas like Coke, Pepsi, lemonade, that type of thing, then try offering like Zevia's, LaCroix, iced teas, like an unsweet iced tea, seltzer water, or flavor water with fruits. So you could put berries in like a water pitcher in your fridge, maybe berries or some lemon and lime, some cucumber. And because sometimes kids are just like, I don't want water, it's so plain. So if you kind of flavor it with that stuff, most kids like water a little bit better. If they're typically eating packaged snack cakes and bars and cookies, then try and Quest protein bars and cookies. Now, I don't push a lot of the packaged like keto and low carb stuff, because they're still packaged, right? They're still processed foods. But if you've got kids that are eating Little Debbie's and Hostess and that type of thing, and you're trying to transition them away from that, you telling them that they're not allowed to have any of that kind of stuff anymore is probably not going to work, or at least it's probably not going to work really well. But if you can kind of give them an alternative, my kids love the Quest stuff. They love those. Another great alternative is the Fat Snacks. It's Fat Snacks, S-N-A-X, cookies. Those are really good. You can make your own really yummy keto and low carb treats. There are so many different options. I actually just posted yesterday on my Instagram, one of our favorite little treats are keto or low carb snowball cookies. So you make them with walnuts or pecans. They're really very easy to make. You can make a large batch of them, freeze half of them if you want. Those are great to pop in the kids' lunch boxes, and they're thawed out by lunchtime. Are really good just as a snack. If they just want something sweet, they're so good. They're made with Swerve, which is an erythritol sweetener. Just really, really good. I love those. So that's another good thing to do. So just trying to kind of come up with some alternatives for them rather than trying to cut them off, just giving them some alternatives. If they typically eat chocolate candy bars, again, I would swap that with Lily's chocolate bars. They are really good. I haven't met anybody yet that doesn't like them. There's such a different variety. There's like so many different options that you can get of flavors. One of my favorite is the salted almond bar. They're so good. There is a caramelized I forget what it's called. It kind of tastes like a burnt caramel flavored chocolate. That's really good. They have just milk chocolate. They have dark chocolate. They have orange flavored chocolate. There's all different kinds of them. So those are really great. And if they typically have cereal and Pop-Tarts for breakfast, just try transitioning them to eggs, bacon, and sausage for breakfast, or making like a frittata in the morning. You can make that at the beginning of the week and have that for several mornings in a row. A lot of kids like those. So there's different ways you can make keto breakfast sandwiches. I make a keto biscuit and I freeze them. And then I make them kind of flat, so they're like the top and bottom. And then I freeze those and pop those out, put them right in the toaster, and they heat up perfectly in the toaster. And then you can put like a sausage patty and egg patty right on a biscuit like that. And cheese. I have a kiddo that loves a breakfast sandwich, and so he thinks those are amazing. I think they're amazing too, actually. Very good. So you can also, I have one kid that will not sit down and eat breakfast in the morning, but he will let me make him bacon, and sometimes he'll take a hard-boiled egg. So that's fine. I feel like at least that's starting his day out right with the right fuel, because if I let him go and he goes to school and gets hungry, I know he's going to end up at the lunch counter buying a bunch of sugary junk that he doesn't need because he's let himself go too long and he's hungry. So just trying to implement those little changes. And sometimes this is going to take a little bit of a sacrifice on the part of you as the parent, because when I started doing this, it's very easy to let them eat cereal, Pop-Tarts, frozen waffles. I mean, that stuff's easy, right? You don't even have to get out of bed. You're just like, you guys know how to make your own breakfast, go do it. Or you can get out of bed right before they have to get their stuff and get out the door. But if you're getting up to make them eggs and bacon and sausage and things like that, it takes a little bit more effort, because you know, I have to get up earlier, and I'm up every single morning making these meals. And but I've just decided that it is what is important to me. I want them fueled properly. I'm really, really trying to help plant these seeds so that as they get older, even though they may fight me a little bit along the way, that as they get older, this is what they're going to return to and how they're going to want to eat. And for the most part, it's worked beautifully. I didn't force them. I just got up, made myself available, made breakfast. You know, who can resist the smell of fresh eggs and bacon in the morning? So they just, now if I don't get up, like if I have a morning I can't do it, like I'm busy doing something else, they are so upset. They're like, what are we gonna eat? What are we gonna eat for breakfast? It's really funny how that changes. And then lastly, we did talk about the sports drinks. So sports drinks during games and practices, maybe instead of the water and sea salt, you know, if they really feel like they need a drink, try water with the Noon, the N-U-U-N powdered, or the Ultima powder electrolytes. You just add that into, or the Keto Vitals is a great one as well, comes in different flavors. And basically you just add that right into your water and there you have a flavored drink and it's got the electrolytes in it. And then maybe they feel a little less like they're kind of missing out. So don't try to change all of this at once. Don't try to force your kids to stop eating pizza and stop eating French fries and stop eating ice cream. It's not going to happen, right? I mean, this is, they've been at this for a while. It's a slow, steady process. Remember to set by example and just help encourage them. Just plant the seeds now and help encourage them so that hopefully they will start kind of making more and more of those decisions on their own. And trust me, once they start realizing how good they feel eating real nutrient-dense food, you don't have to say, see how good you feel eating real nutrient-dense food? It doesn't matter to them, but they start understanding that that's how they feel when they eat that way. And then you'll start noticing that they are moving more and more away from the packaged, processed, sugary junk because they don't like the way it makes them feel. That is a motivator for kids. They understand that and they will listen to that. All right, guys. Well, we are at an hour and that's all I have for this week. So thank you for tuning in and hopefully have some more good interviews coming up for you here in the coming weeks. And I look forward to talking with you guys again next week. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. Enjoy your Easter and we'll talk soon. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Keto Lifestyle Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed what we shared with you today and are looking forward to the next episode.